talk it over one more time. My heart's full of sorrow, mama aching tears. Be gone 24 hours, child, seem like a thousand years. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time. Darling, one month better than a day. Let's talk it over before you go away. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time.
And you don't hear none of those stations playing them. Ask why. In fact, where are those stations today? Somebody better ask somebody that. The people that's most affected by this war.
From animal rights and the anti-war movement to civil disobedience and culture jamming, Justice or Just Us examines law, equality, public policy, and social activism. Tune in Thursdays 8 to 9 a.m. on KUCI in Irvine and KUCI.org.
Yeah, the dirt on publishing, writers, authors, all of it. Listen.
The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. For more information on this or other KUCI programs, visit kuci.org or kucitalk.org.
And welcome back to Writers on Writing on 88.9 KUCI FM. We're broadcasting from the University of California, Irvine campus. We're on the web at kuci.org, and we're on iTunes at Public Radio. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett. My next guest is Billy Collins. He's the author of 8 collections of poetry, including The Trouble with Poetry and Other Poems. He's a distinguished professor of English at Lehman College of the City University of New York. He served as Poet Laureate of the United States from 2001 to 2003 and Poet Laureate of New York State from 2004 to 2006. He's here today to talk about his new collection of poems called Ballistics, published by Random House. Hi, Billy.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Great to have you back. Yeah, you've been on the show a couple of times with your last couple of books, and in your current book, Ballistics, you address the reader as you always do, which is a wonderful thing. Some of the poems are a bit darker than the poems, it seems, in your more recent collections. And as I was reading this book, I was wondering if you, or as you move from one collection of poems to the next, if themes reveal themselves to you, or are you specifically focusing on theme?
I think I'm just getting older. I think things, they tend to get darker, don't they, as you go along? I mean, I guess the other thing, I mean, a number of people have said the poems seem darker, but, someone else said they couldn't be lighter, so. I've already gone as far as I could go in that direction, so there was nowhere to go but dark. I don't know. I think there's kind of a blend in there. I mean, I think there are a number of poems that are, very playful to the point maybe of just goofiness. But I think from the very beginning, I mean, I've written about the main theme of poetry, which is mortality. It seems that's what lyric poetry, that's the job of lyric poetry, to kind of remind us of our mortality and to hope that those kinds of reminders will punctuate our experience and make us pay a little more attention to what we have. So I don't see myself as slipping into some kind of dark Edgar Allan Poe.
No, I don't either.
Yeah. If I do, I won't be able to stay there long.
Well, often when I read your poetry, I imagine that you experience a moment, at least the moment you're writing about, in slow motion, or that occasionally an event stops and starts or breaks down to its most minute element. I don't know. I certainly don't know what the experience is for you, but would you talk about that, about taking a moment and turning it into a poem?
Well, that's basically, I think, what I do. And poetry always wants us to slow down pretty much. I mean, the idea of devices like rhyme and meter and line breaks and boxing words into stanzas and therefore leaving space around the poem, all of those devices have their own discrete effects on the reader, but they're all forming a chorus that says one thing, and that is to slow down. They're kind of, break-tapping efforts that ask us to slow down and observe the moment. At least slow down from the pace of prose. It's often a little moment, or more usually it's a little phrase that begins, or a little notion or concept, and then I do feel everything kind of coming to a halt. Like a lot of writers, I get into that zone where you do lose track of time because you are sort of investigating this moment. You're kind of trying to slip inside the moment as if you slip inside a hologram. And I have one bizarre, probably not very enlightening metaphor that maybe applies to this, and that is, how you can, as if you have this particle accelerator, you can smash atoms together or particles and they make this big explosion. This, my physics is like 50 years old, but matter is sort of made of these atoms, but time is made of moments. And if you analyze a moment, it also has this kind of power of compression to, have kind of explosive results. There is something inside an atom, there is something inside a moment, and you can actually, just through concentration, enter it.
That's interesting. So do you spend a lot of time sitting and observing? And I ask that because, of course, I mean, what you just said, but a lot of newish writers often have the misconception that if they just wait, something will hit them. They can be doing whatever they do during the day and not sitting in the same chair day after day, waiting and observing and working.
I feel that way too, actually. I mean, not like most people, life is most of the time it's just this blur of it's accelerated experience as you just are pushed from, opening the mail to going to work to talking on the telephone to making coffee or whatever. But I think if you're a writer, you probably have a little antenna that is up a lot of the time and is able to kind of catch opportunities to stop. But I never sit down, people say, what do you do when you sit down to write? Or how do you confront this blank piece of paper? Well, I never sit down with a blank piece of paper. I get a notion for a poem, usually, in the car, taking a shower, taking a walk. And then when I go to the desk, I have something. I'm never, looking at a blank piece of paper and hoping to commit an act of literature by 10 in the morning. I have a notebook, like most writers. I'm jotting things down. And writers have a kind of opportunistic attitude toward experience. You're, as much as you can, you're looking around to find something on the periphery that might turn into a little piece of literature.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You are listening to Writers on Writing. I'm with Billy Collins. His latest book is Ballistics, published by Random House. Will you read to us, Billy?
Yeah, well, I do happen to have a poem here from this. It's from this collection, Ballistics, that came out last month, and it's called The Future. When I finally arrive there, and it will take many days and nights, I would like to believe others will be waiting and might even want to know how it was. So I will reminisce about a particular sky or a woman in a white bathrobe or the time I visited a narrow strait where a famous naval battle had taken place. Then I will spread out on the table a large map of my world and explain to the people of the future in their pale garments what it was like, how mountains rose between valleys, and this was called geography, how boats loaded with cargo plied the rivers, and this was known as commerce, how the people from this pink area crossed over into this light green area and set fires and killed whoever they found, and this was called history. And they will listen, mild-eyed and silent, as more of them arrive to join the circle, like ripples moving toward, not away from, a stone tossed into a pond.
Thank you. Let's talk about this one for a minute. So how did this one begin? How did this poem begin?
I think probably, it's hard to say exactly, but the concept of the possibility of, you know, getting to the future. I mean, a lot of poems are hypotheses. They're based on an if, you know, what. So this is, you know, it starts with a kind of science fiction premise. What if you could get to the future? And then ironically, it says, and it will take many days and nights. So I'm visiting the people of the future, and there I pretend that I will have a kind of rapt audience who wants to hear about the past, you know. But it's a dystopian vision, you know, of the future. Or maybe it's utopian, I don't know, because when I talk about the past, you know, I talk about these particular experiences, like looking at a sky or falling in love with this woman or looking at seeing this sight of a naval battle. But then when I say, you know, there are mountains between the valleys, apparently in the future, there's no topography. Or, I don't know if you can figure that one out. And there's no commerce, apparently. So the future is getting weirder and weirder. But it seems to be a peaceful future, because I have to explain that nations invaded each other and actually killed each other, and that's called history. And I have them I portray them mild-eyed and silent. I'm probably thinking of Tennyson's Lotus Eaters, these mild-eyed people, and they are fascinated. It's like most poems, it's very egotistical. You know, they're fascinated with this creature from the past. And then I kind of end with this naturalistic image of them moving like ripples, but toward the splash and not away from it. So, you know, I'm kind of a messenger from the past, visiting, I guess, what is really a kind of strange future, that where there is no war, but there's also no commerce or topography. Someone said that all science fiction is basically about two stories. Either we go there or they come here. In this case, I go there.
That's great. So did this one come out in sort of like one sitting, or do you begin and go back and revisit and it takes a week? I mean, how does that go?
Just about everyone comes out in, all the poems come out in one sitting, because once I start the premise, you know, of what's it going to be like to visit the future, for me it's, you know, it's game on. I mean, nothing else matters except finding a way to end this poem, and I guess what I'm looking for is this stone that's tossed into a pond at the very end of it. So it's all done in one sitting. It could be a half an hour or 4 hours. So the conceptual run of it, you know, it's the idea about the future and talking to them and then having them listen. Kind of rhetorical development, you know, beginning, middle, and end, that's all done in one sitting, because I'm just, you know, insane with curiosity about where this thing is going. And the revisions that would take place days or weeks later is basically trying to adjust individual words, find a better adjective, improve the cadence of the line. They're little polishings, but the poem, kind of the run of it, takes place at once.
How about another? Will you read another, maybe What Love Does on 96?
Sure.
And if you just tuned in, you're a little bit late. We have a few minutes left, though, with Billy Collins, whose latest book is Ballistics.
Usually you don't hear that on the radio. If you turn in, you tune in late, you're too late. okay, let me read this poem. It's called What Love Does. A fine thing, or so it sounds on the radio in the summer with all the windows rolled down, yet it pierces not only the heart, but the eyeball and the scrotum and the little target of the nipple with arrows. It turns everything into a symbol, like a storm that breaks loose in the final chapter of a long novel. And it may add sparkle to a morning or deepen a night when the bed is ringed with fire. It teaches you new joys and new maneuvers, the takedown, the reversal, the escape. But mostly it comes and goes, a bee visiting the center of one flower, then another. Even as the ink is drying on her name, it is off to visit someone in another city, a city with two steeples, rows of brick chimney pots, and a school with a tree-lined entrance. It will travel through the night to get there, and it will arrive like an archangel through an iron gate no one ever seemed to notice before.
Oh, talk about this one. How did this one arrive?
Well, let's see. I mean, I guess I'm just bringing out on the radio in the summertime, love sounds, you get this sort of romantic version of love. But, yeah, then I'm talking about the theme of love hurting and, I guess, these maneuvers, these wrestling maneuvers, like the takedown, the reversal, the escape. Suddenly, you're grappling with this other person. And then the poem finds a way to end by talking about this old theme of the transience of love. It comes and goes. It visits like a bee. It goes from one flower to another. Or then the final metaphor is it travels from one city to another. And then I kind of particularize the city and turn love into this kind of dramatic archangel that arrives through a gate that no one ever seemed to notice before. I guess that gets at sort of the power and the novelty of love, the strength, the mystical part of it.
There, I don't see politics in your poems, at least not overtly.
Well, I kind of avoid. I mean, there's so much written about politics these days. It's absolutely inescapable. There's just this flood, and I just couldn't see adding another drop to that. But I think the other thing is, and this sounds glib, but prose political writing is about history, and poetry is about time. And I think that's a distinction in my mind. Poetry is about the passage of time that results in mortality. And someone defined history as the violent misuse of time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd leave it to others to write about history, because politics is part of the historical game, part of the historical charade or progress.
There was
this organization called Poets Against the War that came out during the run-up to the Iraq War, and I wasn't really a part of it because I just thought Poets Against the War has the impact of like generals for the war. It seems so expected that people, if you're going to reform anybody's thinking through poetry, it would be better to do it with more surprising tactics.
Yeah.
Even like Baker's against the war would be would be a little more attention getting than poets against the war.
Right, right. I've wanted to ask you this since you were on last time, because last time you were on, we talked about persona. And is it you, Billy, writing a poem, or is it a persona you're taking on to write a poem? And I've been thinking about that and reading this new collection. I started thinking that again. In writing these poems, each poem, I don't know, or each section, are you, or are you writing from a character's point of view, or someone you imagine might have these thoughts, these feelings, this experience?
But I'm not exactly me. I'm better than me. I'm a better, you know, meeting the writer is, I've said this before, but it's one of life's more reliably disappointing experiences. And the reason is that it's not that writers are such, you know, bad characters, but it's that you already have met the writer under the best possible circumstances, which is on the page. And so, yeah, my persona is very much like me, but it's a definite improvement. The persona is your better, you know, if you're a writer. His life is simpler and more noble than yours. I mean, my persona has never had a job. He's never been to a laundromat. you know, he's a vast improvement over the actual Billy Collins. And once you invent this character, I think you're very right, Barbara, in calling it a character, because it's very much like a character in fiction that bears, you know, great resemblance to the poet. But it has an independence, in a way, and it has a consistency in its tone. And that's all a poet really has to do, is basically invent this character that you can kind of stick with that character throughout your poetic career.
Hmm. We have time for one more. Will you read to us one more time?
Surely. Would you like me to just...
Anything you like.
Out?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there's a little a sonnet I wrote called The Golden Years, and it's somewhere here. This is unforgivable, but here it is. It's a sonnet, and it's about kind of the outcropping of of gated communities and condo developments and the like.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of said in the voice of a retired gentleman.
Okay.
The Golden Years. All I do these drawn-out days is sit in my kitchen at Pheasant Ridge, where there are no pheasants to be seen, and last time I looked, no ridge. I could drive over to Quail Falls and spend the day there playing bridge, but the lack of a falls and the absence of quail would only remind me of Pheasant Ridge. I know a widow at Fox Run and another with a condo at Smoky Ledge. One of them smokes and neither can run, so I'll stick to the pledge I made to Midge. Who frightened the fox and bulldozed the ledge, I ask in my kitchen at Pheasant Ridge.
That's great. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks so much again for taking the time and coming on the show.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. That was Billy Collins speaking to us from the East Coast. And love his stuff. Love his work. Love all his work. He has been on the show a couple of other times, as I said. And you can find those shows on the podcast. It's a blog. It's writersonwriting.blogspot.com. In the search box, you can enter his name, and those shows will come up. The last one was for the last book, The Trouble with Poetry, and his wonderful, wonderful poem, The Lanyard, one of my favorite poems of all time. Anyway, you can find this show. You can subscribe to the podcast, actually, on iTunes, so every time a new show is uploaded, you will receive it. And I think we're at the end of our time. I'm going to end with a quote from a Billy Collins poem. Stepping from the title to the first lines is like stepping into a canoe. A lot of things can go wrong. This line could actually be about a lot of things, huh? These last 2 weeks in the presidential campaign, for one. Anyway, I'm going to leave you now and hope that you'll be back next week. I'll be here with more authors. And I thank you for listening to Writers on Writing on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett. My book is Pen on Fire. I'll see you next time.